How's it going, everybody? We're back here on After Dark Radio. It's September 2nd, 2011, here at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. It is, in fact, our first show that we have done since May. I have not updated the website since May. I didn't even check my emails since May. Problem was, summer came. Had a lot of projects going on. And as much as I love doing the show, it was just one extra thing I had to do on a Friday afternoon that I just couldn't fit into the schedule. And I really miss doing it. I know a lot of people miss the show. And now that summer's over, everything started to calm down a little bit. It is time to bring the show back. We've already got a big guest coming up on the show this afternoon. It's going to be awesome. We're going to be joined by Dan Farron, who has, in fact, gotten as close as you can get to Area 51 without being shot, and has talked to a number of people that have been inside Area 51. So we're going to talk about all of those things on the program here tonight. It's going to be awesome. We've already got a guest lined up for next week. I'm sorry. We're talking about that more a little while here as well. And, of course, we're going to bring on Carl Stern to talk all of the news. For those of you that are new to the show, AfterDarkRadioShow.com is the place to go. If you head to the website and click on past shows, you can have a look at all the things we did prior to May, prior to our summer hiatus. Had a lot of great shows on. We've talked about the Majestic 12 documents, JFK, UFOs. We've had some great interviews as well, including Dr. Jeff Meldrum, PhD, talking scientific evidence for the existence of Bigfoot. We've had some awesome shows on. So go up there. They're all free. Check them out, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Click on past shows. They're all available there for you to download. Get caught up to speed with what the show is all about. Spread the word. Let's get a lot of people listening to the show. The more people listening to the show, the less likely it is for me to take a summer-long, three-month hiatus ever again in the future. We do it every week on Friday afternoon. Also got a new Facebook page, which is up right now. Facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. As of the time I am recording this, 205 people liking this. I'd like to be 2005, maybe 20,005. So let's get people liking the show as well. Just head up there, click the like button, and we'll add you to the list. And in fact, we'll have a lot of stuff up there as well. Hopefully people will be posting different articles. If you come across a great article, post it up on the Facebook page, and I'll try to put those on the main website as well. Let's try and get this whole thing going again, get the whole thing rocking, and have a great time here at After Dark Radio. So we're going to be back in just a moment with Carl Stern. Going to be talking all of the news, maybe to some discussion of Area 51 as well. And then later on in the program, we will in fact be joined by Dan Farron, who has tried to investigate in person on foot Area 51. It's going to be an awesome show. So we'll be back in just a moment. Brian Alvarez here at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. We are back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here, joined by Carl Stern. AfterDarkRadioShow.com is the place to go. We're here to talk all of the news, all of which is up on the website on any given day. And Carl, it's been a long time since we've done one of these programs.
Yes, and I notice also, in addition to the website, we now have a Facebook page.
That's right. Facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. As soon as I figure out how to make you an admin, you'll be an admin as well. But want to get a lot of people going up there to check that out. And Carl, you're aware that today we're doing a show on Area 51. And what are your thoughts on Area 51?
Well, actually, on my last trip out west, I drove by Area 51. And obviously, didn't get to go, but drove past there, and it was it's pretty neat. I mean, it's middle of nowhere. I've saw all the the so-called conspiracies about it, and there's been a number of documentaries made about Area 51. I mean, just about any time you can turn on the History Channel or A&E, there's about every day there's something some sort of documentary about Area 51. Military base, very secretive. A lot of activity post, the Roswell crash supposedly has ties to Area 51, and it's really hard to say about Area 51. I mean, obviously, the very tight security around Area 51 is one of the things that conspiracy theorists love to trumpet. But I mean, it's a military base. What do you suggest? And obviously, there's been a lot of prototype manufacturing of different military-related aircraft. giraffes and so forth out there. I noticed on one special I watched maybe a year or so ago that at certain times during the Cold War, they were out there using heat-sensitive paint to paint over the shadows that these experimental aircraft were casting on the runways, just so the Soviets with their spy satellites couldn't tell even the shape of an aircraft by reading the different temperature gradients where the shadow was cast. So they go to great lengths to hide what's going on out there and stuff. And for military applications, that makes perfect sense. But at the same time, too, it opens the door for a lot of skepticism for people who don't necessarily trust the government or think there may be more up to it than that. So I'm real interested in listening to what your guest has to say today, because you know, it's pretty neat out there in the absolutely the middle of nowhere, and that's going to be pretty interesting.
Something I'm going to bring up with him. I was looking around online today at various things regarding Area 51. There is one of the first things that comes up on Google is a website, dreamlandresort.com. And what is interesting about this particular website is there are brand new photos from August 23rd, 2011. So we're talking within the last 2 weeks, brand new satellite imagery of Area 51. And these are some photos here. Let's just put it that way. These are close up. I mean, you could see virtually vehicles here. In fact, there are some shots here where you could see here's two airplanes right here. Here's some vehicles. I mean, these are the most close-up, detailed photos you'll ever see of Area 51. And one of the things, obviously, that people talk about here when they say, oh, I can look at these photos, I don't see a disc, I don't see anything. I mean, obviously, one of the big stories regarding Area 51 is that much of this stuff is done underground. And clearly, there are some things done underground. Exactly what? Who knows? What is the extent of the underground portion of the base, I don't know, but certainly these aerial photos are pretty interesting.
Well, you know, a lot of the Area 51 lore comes about from, you know, did we capture extraterrestrial vehicles back in the, you know, the post-World War II era, the 1950s and so forth, when it seemed like UFO mania was at an all-time high. Did we capture some of these vehicles and use their technology to make our own military applications, things like the stealth bomber and so forth, the Blackbird and things like that were supposedly engineered using technology gleaned from extraterrestrial craft, and that's always been kind of tied to Area 51. And you know, again, I think that the actual name, the military name, I think, for Area 51 is Groom Lake, isn't that right? It's the actual the real military name for the base out there. But it's so secretive. Anytime you have something like that, especially involving the U.S. military, you're going to have all kinds of wacko, dreamed up, you know, stuff, especially from the people of the government's out to get me crowd. And I'm interested to see. I've watched a lot of stuff on Area 51. All I'm really sold about it right now is that it's a secretive military base. And you know, once you get into tying that to like Roswell and things like that, which, you know, as we've talked on here on the show several times before, and I've been to Roswell, New Mexico, been to all the museums and the area where supposedly the crash took place and all that. And, you know, I'm firmly convinced something happened there. What, I don't know. I'm convinced it's not what the official story said it was, but I don't know what it was. And, you know, when you start piling secret on top of secret, it gets, you know, you're just opening the door for all sorts of theories to come out.
Something I wanted to focus on a future show. I don't even know if you had a chance to read it yet, but the first post that I put up since May, of course I noted I hadn't updated the website much when we took our hiatus, but the first show that I, or the first article that I put up since May was entitled Black-Eyed Kid Encounter in Ireland. And the reason I found that story interesting is about 3 weeks ago, I have no idea what I read or where I heard this or why I even began looking into this, but I heard about the story of the black-eyed kids. And for those of you that have never heard this story, It was a story that 1998, there was a news group posting by a man named Brian Bethel, who was a journalist. And he told this story about how he'd run into these two children who greatly unnerved him. And long story short, the key to this was that their eyes were completely black. No pupil, no iris, just completely black. He got all freaked out. He took off. And this became like a big deal online with other people going, oh, you know, I had an experience like this as well. These kids, they acted really weird. They had these black eyes. I felt like if I would have picked them up or got to the car or whatever, I'd have been killed and this and that. And it was just kind of a really fascinating story, partly because my eyes are so brown that they're basically black. And I thought, Jesus, have I scared some people here in my life? But had you ever heard this this story and I guess any offshoots of it?
I've heard that back originally when it came out, you know, because like you said, it was one of those things that kind of really took off online. It sort of become the flavor of the month as far as this type of stuff going on. And, you know, I don't know. This could get into demon possession or anything like that. So, I don't know what to make of that.
We're going to do a show on this one of these days. I don't know if anybody listening to this right now has ever, I guess, heard different offshoots from different parts of the country. You know, when you hear stories like this, it's like, you know, when I was there's always these sort of weird rumors. Like when I was a little kid, there was the deal with the lick and stick tattoos. That if you put these lick and stick tattoos on, they're being laced with drugs. These drug dealers are trying to get kids hooked on drugs. It's all an urban legend, you know. But in this situation here, I mean, you actually have a guy by name, Brian Bethel. He was a journalist. You could look up his credentials. He actually was a journalist. This wasn't just some sort of fake credential that he made up. You know, this was a guy. He saw them, and it was a real person. So, you know, maybe other stories around the country, that sort of thing, ended up becoming an urban legend, that sort of thing. But this is at least one where you can trace it back to, here's the guy, here's what he said. He claims to actually experience this. So at that point, it becomes a little bit more than just your average urban legend of, oh, I heard it from so-and-so, a friend of a friend, my uncle's niece, this and that, whatever. So this is at least a little bit different.
Yeah, you know, as a lot of people know, or perhaps they don't, since we've kicked off season two here, maybe we have some new listeners to the show. I've been involved in law enforcement for almost 20 years now, and one of the things you really learn to begin with, and it's honestly, it's probably one of the most important things you can know to be an effective investigator is the devil is in the details. You know, everybody's, you know, even think about your hometown, wherever it is you may live, and everybody's heard rumors of some sort of, you know, maybe some tragedy that's happened there or some murder or something like that. Everybody's heard a rumor or something about whatever, and if you notice, you start putting them all together, the details are all largely the same. It's just people have added on different their own color of telling the story. But once you get a hold of a story or a situation, and you start getting very detailed input, that's the ones you need to start paying attention to, because those are. Again, you know, there's old sayings become old sayings for a reason, because there's truth to them. The devil is really in the details, and when you can put a name, and like you said, it's not just, you know, somebody heard or it's my cousin told me or something like that, but when you actually have an eyewitness, and even multiple eyewitnesses are better, but when you have an eyewitness with a specific location and a very detailed descriptions, that's the ones you need to pay attention to instead of, you know, someone theorizing up something they heard somewhere.
Let me ask you this as a law enforcement individual. You can actually go online and read Brian Bethel's original article that he wrote about this, and he talks a lot about the appearance of the two kids. They were two young boys, and I guess the whole key to this thing is they were acting very strange, and, you know, sometimes kids act strange, that sort of thing, but then the eyes were the one, that was a part of the story that, like, that's what freaked him out, and he thought, oh my God, this is something, you know, this is something really not right. Now, as someone who has worked in law enforcement, and presumably you've seen your share of folks that are on drugs, one of the theories at the time was these were just two drugged up kids, and as a result of, I don't know what they were taking, this is kind of my question for you, are there certain things that you take these things and your pupils just become massively dilated, and, you know, for somebody that's just like, you know, it's kind of dark, you don't know what's going on, there are these two kids acting weird, and their pupils are dilated, it looks like they have no pupils, no iris, you know, that can really freak a person out. So is that something that, I mean, is that something that's a possible explanation for this?
Oh, certainly it could be, especially when you, if you were taking something that, that did your pupils that way, and at the same time you were maybe, you know, taking something that, that was a downer, maybe smoking marijuana or something like that, something that would give you kind of a laid-back, drowsy kind of look where your eyes wouldn't, your eyelids wouldn't necessarily be wide open, and your pupils are super dilated. You know, you've got that. Absolutely, it can look completely black in there, especially you're going to have a, you know, if you're really blasted out of your mind or something, you'd have this, you know, this maybe super relaxed expression, or you know, just a very not normal expression on your face. Your face will be real relaxed, and it could be absolutely unnerving too. Not even the untrained eye, but the trained eye as well. I mean, certainly I've dealt with people over the years that have looked, you know, almost deceased. In fact, you think they are deceased until you get to, you know, they, you know, examining them or whatever, and you know, that's kind of scary. So, yeah, absolutely, it could be something like that. Certainly not out of the realm of possibility. And you know, when dealing with anything unexplained, you kind of, if you've ever seen something that just, you know, as far as your mind, it doesn't compute, as I like to say, and I've seen several instances of that. The first thing your mind does is not jump to conclusions. Your mind instead just sort of goes into this, what is happening here, and nothing logically is processing what's going on, and it takes a few minutes where you get it to get your bearings, especially if it's something completely out of the norm. I'll relate an experience I had several years ago. I was out on patrol, and I saw you know, car accidents happen, God, you know, dozens of times. You know, been out on the road as much as I am, you're going to witness car accidents occasionally. But I pulled up to a store, and I saw a pickup backing up to another building, essentially taking aim at another building. And then I saw this vehicle just slam on the gas and bust just completely through the front of this store. And then back up and do it again. And just watching this unfold, you know, my mind just kind of goes, what's happening here? This makes no sense. This isn't an accident because the guy backed up and did it again. This is a deliberate action, but what is happening here? And it turned out to be a guy that was having some mental issues and was on some drugs and alcohol and so forth. And he was, you know, acting completely outside the norm, and that did not compute. And when you have something happen like that, especially you see something strange, you hear something strange, or you worse yet, you hear something strange and see something that doesn't correlate with that, your mind doesn't necessarily go from point A to point B. It kind of gets lost in the middle of the alphabet somewhere. And a lot of these stories have logical explanations. They have a valid answer to them after you step back out and can examine it for a minute, but a lot of times you just get a glimpse of this, and that's what makes your mind come up with these sometimes odd scenarios, because what you're seeing doesn't make sense, and sometimes your explanation makes even less.
One more thing I wanted to bring up here before we head out of this segment. If you go to AfterDarkRadioShow.com and scroll down, there's a story about Bigfoot boom in Banff. It's called, and this, of course, Alberta, Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And it's just Alberta, Canada. It's one of the biggest, I guess it's a wildlife park. Or not, anyway, point is, if you go to this article here from the Calgary Sun, there is a photo right here at the top that appears to be a, I don't want to say an extreme close-up, but it is a big-time close-up of the face of a Bigfoot. Now, quite frankly, it looks like an Ewok to me from Return of the Jedi, but, I mean, this is like, you know, you always hear, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. This is a photo where you look at it, and it's like, this is not your blurry, out of focus. It's a little bit blurry, out of focus. But, I mean, in general, that's the eyes, that's nose, that's the mouth, that's the head, it's cone-shaped. I mean, this is like as close of a photo of a Bigfoot as you'll ever see. They claim it's real. And did you happen to see this photo here? And what are your thoughts on this tail?
Well, yeah, I'm looking at it right now, as a matter of fact, and it just looks fake as all get out to me. I mean, it's like you said, it looks like the Ewok from Star Wars, this close-up photo of this. I mean, looking at it, I mean, the eyes look pretty good, I have to say. The eyes, the nose and the mouth, especially the mouth, is just something that doesn't strike me right about it. It looks very, I don't know, animatronic sort of. The nose looks really not so good, but the eyes and right around that, that's, I mean, it's got the folds of skin right under the eyes and looks pretty good. The hair looks very well groomed, I have to say, just right around the face. I mean, it looks like he combed his face or something. I don't know. So it's just interesting to note that this looks, you know, a lot different than some of the classic Bigfoot imagery we've seen. Bigfoot apparently does not have a mustache and a large, fairly large nose, small beady eyes. Kind of, you know, it's an unsettling picture to be sure, but I don't know. Something about the mouth and lips just doesn't sit right to me as far as what this is. I'm wondering if this could be some kind of like diseased bear or something like that. I don't know. This without like pulling up other images of like, you know, hairless bears or something like that, I wouldn't know what to make of this. But I don't know. It's just I don't know what to think about it, to be honest with you. It just doesn't set. I mean, my first inclination looking at it is it doesn't look real to me.
This would be a bear missing a snout, which would be quite the, I don't know. I mean, obviously, again, you know.
Well, the thing is, if you look at the nose, it's, at just first glance, it does appear that way. But if you really get to looking at that nose, it could be a deformed snout. Especially if it's discolored. If you notice it's real black around the bottom of the nose, if you in your mind fill the rest of that nose in with that same color black, you get a snout sort of out of it. Maybe a deformed snout, but you know, this, I don't know. I still can't rule out deformed bear out of this picture.
Well, according to the article, the Discovery Channel show Finding Bigfoot is in Calgary as we speak. And shooting footage, and a spokesman for the Sylvanic Bigfoot group has claimed that they've got what they believe is DNA proof, and they're hoping to have that by October. So I guess, as usual, wait and see. But it's not like we haven't heard stories like this about 1,000 times in the past 5 years, and usually comes up completely empty, but an interesting photo nonetheless. That's for sure. So I guess we shall see. Todd Standing is the one who was not only provided this photo here, but this photo is apparently a video capture image, which means this is not like a photograph that was taken. A video was taken, and this is one still from the video. So presumably at some point we'll see the video. Perhaps it's out there already, and I'm just completely out of the loop after having been gone for a while. But I guess we shall check on that. One more thing I just wanted to mention since we're on the subject of potentially primates here. There was a story up there about apes using iPads. I always love stories of animals giving humans a run for their money. And you, of course, are you've got an iPad of your own. You love it. What were you thinking when you read that article about apes using an iPad?
I was thinking Planet of the Apes.
It is ironic.
A very timely article.
Yes, it is.
Must say. Yeah, I mean, sure. You know, animals are so much smarter than we give them credit for, and not just necessarily primates. As I know, as you're well aware, you've trained your cats to verbal commands.
I have.
And this is not ridiculous at all. I mean, anybody that has had, you know, pets for a long period of time. No, they have individual personalities, very distinct personalities, and different degrees of even not just intelligence, different degrees of even reasoning. And so this isn't by any stretch of the imagination out of sync with reality.
All of these stories are up at AfterDarkRadioShow.com and, of course, Facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. And, Carl, before we let you go, let's get some plugs in. How can people find out more about Carl Stern?
I have a website, CarlStern.com. That's Carl with the letter K, K-A-R-L-S-T-E-R-N.com. And follow me on Twitter at DragonKingCarl. And that's pretty much get you everything you need to know about Carl.
We'll have Carl on every week for some extended segments as well. And Carl, thanks again for doing the show today. We'll be back in just a moment, everybody. Dan Farron is going to be on talking Area 51. He has gotten very, very close to the facility, and he's talked to people who have been inside. What does he have to say? We'll find out in just a moment. Brian Alvarez here, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. We are back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. We are delighted today to be joined by Dan Farron, who is going to talk to us, as noted earlier in the show, about Area 51. He has, I guess I can't say he's been there, but he's been very close. And Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Brian. I think I've mentioned to you before, I've been as close as you can possibly get without being shot.
That's good. Because if you got any closer, there'd be no show today. Now, I've been looking around online, and I have found a website. It's called DreamlandResort.com.
Yes.
And the reason I bring this up is because they just put up, within the last 2 weeks, brand new aerial shots, high resolution, of Area 51. It's quite amazing, actually.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you brought that up because I made a note to mention that because actually they were just taken as of August 23rd. And it's interesting because, you know, you can find Area 51 on Google Maps. I mean, you can just put Area 51 and it pulls it up, but it's an older picture. But obviously from the pictures that they just posted about, which is barely over a week ago, there's new construction going on out there. And it looks like there's a new hangar being put up. And there's speculation that it could be for the airlines that they bring them back in, Jennet, the airlines they use to bring people back and forth to work there, that it could be a maintenance area for there. But also, you know, with the history of Area 51, it could be that they're constructing, you know, new hangars because they have a new project to work on.
Now, I guess before we get any further here, let's talk a little bit about what exactly Area 51 is, and you in particular. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself, and when did you first hear about and become interested in getting as close to Area 51 as you could get to without being shot?
Well, I'm a writer, and I do all kinds of different type of writing. And one of the things that has always fascinated me is conspiracy theories. Not so much that I would call myself a conspiracy theorist, but I am a person who's interested in why they exist, ones that are real, ones that aren't real, why people feel a need for them, just the whole psychological stuff behind that. Much like everybody else, I've always been interested in UFOs and always read the books when I was a kid and watched the movies and all the video, but I never was a really, really big UFO fanatic. And actually, my wife is somebody who really loves UFOs and is fascinated by that. And one time on a trip to Vegas, she actually saw that there was a tour of Area 51 that you could go on. And I was like, oh, great, they're going to take you out in the woods and say, here's where a flying saucer landed here, or this happened there, or whatever. But I found that it was a really fascinating tour. It took about 8-9 hours of the day. You basically got to see everything from the dry lake beds out in Alamo, California, to go out to the little alien, which is out in the town of Rachel, and up to the actual, as like I said, as far as you can possibly get to Area 51. After going on that, when we've gone back to Vegas from time to time, since we know where everything is now, we've had a tendency to go back where we could spend a little bit longer or dwell on things there. It really and truly is fascinating, and like I said, you know, for a conspiracy theory person, Area 51 is like Disneyland. You know, you have so many theories that are
sure
going in and out of there in all these different ways. So what happened was, I guess over the last 4 or 5 years, I've become more interested in what's going on at Area 51. I will tell you, I have never seen a UFO or anything like that. of all the theories of stuff that goes on out at Area 51, I'm probably the most doubtful over that stuff, mainly because I'm one of these guys you have to really kind of show me something to prove it, or at least, as a writer, I try to keep an open mind so I can see the sides, pro and con. And oftentimes, unfortunately, a lot of the people who are very, very pro-UFO are almost fanatical about it. And it's kind of hard to separate where the actual evidence is from where, they just want it to be.
So it's pretty clear, obviously, that it is a top secret military base. Mm-hmm. They're doing different things there, obviously, with the new construction. We can talk about that here in just a moment. But in your opinion, from having been out there, and I guess just having never seen anything at this point, I mean, do you pretty much just believe that this is a military facility, or do you believe that maybe there's something else going on in there?
Oh, I think that I can almost like 99% tell you something else is going on in there. Obviously, I mean, first of all, it's Area 51 is about 100 miles north of Las Vegas, and it's off a stretch of highway, which is Highway 375, which they renamed the Extraterrestrial Highway, because a lot of UFOs have been seen out there. Now, one thing I do want to mention also is Nevada is very smart in some ways. They know that this is big-time tourist. So, as you know from being in Las Vegas, you go through Vegas, you see T-shirts, you see all these little shops, you see... the minor league baseball team for Las Vegas is called the Area 51s. I mean, they take full advantage of it. They enjoy having it that way. And I think also the government enjoys the fact that there is all this publicity about what is the mystery of Area 51. Because like a really good magician, while they're doing the trick with the right hand, the left hand is the hand that you should be watching. So whereas I don't know that much UFO stuff going on out there, there's a whole bunch of other stuff in a whole bunch of different areas. I mean, they used to do all the test flights for a lot of the U-2 and a lot of the other airlines they use. And I know also that a lot of the drones that they're currently using in the war and they've used as on the attack on terror have been basically experimented and taken out there and used. So it acts as an airspace where you can test out new airlines and new airplanes. It acts as a place where they also used to explode the nuclear weapons back in the 1950s. That's a little concern of mine also is how much radiation is actually out there in some parts of the desert. Also it's a place where something is going on. And what I find ironic is that people talk about the stuff that we talk about now about what's going on at Area 51 is probably about 10 to 20 years behind whatever is going on out there. I mean, there's stuff that's going on now, and I'm sure the government is, and it sounds so paranoid, but I'm sure the government is very happy that people are still dwelling on UFOs and some of this other stuff as opposed to staying away from what might be going on there now.
Now, there had always been rumors for a long time that Area 51 had been moved, and that once people found out about it and it kind of became a part of UFO folklore, that whatever was there, they just got rid of it. But, I mean, it's obvious from watching from looking at the pictures and the new construction. I mean, obviously, the base itself hasn't moved completely. There's still a lot of stuff going on there. And do you buy into the stories that, yes, at some point there was extraterrestrial material there, but once people started figuring out about this, they moved this into a mountain, for example, and now this is just strictly an air base? Or what do you think?
I don't think you can ever refer to Area 51 as strictly just an air base. There's always something that's going to be going on out there. Whether that there's anything that's extraterrestrial out there and maybe it was moved, I mean, part of the legend of Area 51 is there's all kinds of underground caverns and floors and levels. Things very easily could be moved. But I think that sometimes we spend too much time concentrating on the UFO aspect of it, and we're not really seeing what's going on out there, more so in the lines of black ops. There's a lot of really kind of strange stuff going on out there. I mean, President Clinton at one point petitioned to see if he could find out what was going on in Area 51, and he was turned down. And this is the President of the United States. They were like, no, you don't need to know this.
I would think he would need to know, but that's just me.
Yeah, I would think so, too. But the Department of Energy are the people that basically kind of run that out there, and there's CIA, and there's all kinds of other stuff. And if you go into the really heavy-duty people, there a lot of people believe there's the New World Order is out there and all that other kind of stuff. So there is something going on out there, and there's something that is very, very secretive. But I don't know about the UFO stuff. That stuff, of all the studying and all the people I've talked to and stuff, that is the one area that I'm just not exactly sure if it's completely real or it's just a really good cover that keeps people from concentrating on what's really going on out there.
Now, if you look at the aerial photos, just the very fact that we have aerial photos, and as I mentioned earlier, I mean, you can see there's airplanes sitting right there. You can see cars. I mean, obviously, I mean, to me, I don't know, but I would presume that the fact that you can get these high-quality photos of the above-ground goings-on at Area 51, that would strongly suggest that whatever they're doing, the top-secret stuff, there is an underground aspect to this base.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, they're not going to be leaving anything outside in the daylight that would be very obviously and easily seen. Most of the testing that they do is at night. I mean, people who have gone out and want to really see Area 51, you know, you got to trek back up into the mountains. You got to go up there at night, and maybe with a good pair of binoculars, you might be able to see the runway lights. But this is about as covert as you can possibly get.
Let me ask you a question here, because I don't know the answer to this. I don't know if anybody does, but okay, so Let's go back 20 years. You know, let's go back to the early 90s when people started getting reports of strange lights around the area of Area 51. And these lights were behaving in a manner that you don't see with conventional aircraft. You know, the reports that people gave about these things, it was not conventional aircraft. Now, you think, it's been 20 years. Okay,
right.
We've had a fair number of wars in the meantime. Mm-hmm. So where are all of these craft, you know, are these kind of waiting for, like, oh my god, when we really need this stuff, we'll bring it out, and we don't need it for what's going on in Afghanistan or whatever, or where is this stuff? Are we getting reports from war zones?
I haven't heard anything about that. Now, I think what you have to look at also is there may be a chance that when they test some of these things, they don't work, or
that's
they're
true.
Not exactly where they need to be for what the government wants. And also, one of the more interesting theories about Area 51 that I've talked to people about is that Area 51 is generally about 10 to 15 years ahead of everything that we have now. And that is, like, for example, when the video tape recorder came out in the late 1979, 1980s, they had it there in the early 60s, that with the development being so far ahead, they had these things. And there's also been talk that maybe they have different cures for different diseases there. You know, you would think after all these years that, you know, the common cold would be something pretty easy that they can knock down. But they keep that stuff there, and the whole idea of when to release it, and this may tie into the airplane stuff, is they release it whenever it's convenient for them. And that is, for example, if you find a cure for the common cold, you might want to wait so that the pharmaceutical companies can make as much money off it as they possibly can to release it. Also, unfortunately, oftentimes disease is used to, the government looks at it as a way to control population. So maybe they feel like it's not time to stop this disease yet. And the same thing with the planes. You know, they're probably waiting till the very right time to use most of them. And if there's one word that you can tie in with Area 51, it's patient, because they're very, very patient.
Now, you have talked to some people that have been there, and I guess we'll get into that in just a moment. I do have one other question, since you were talking about the tape recorder and that sort of thing. I mean, so if we think that, okay, everything there is, you know, we got a bunch of stuff there that's 15 years beyond what we have right now.
Right.
I mean, do we have, I mean, obviously they've never mentioned anything like this, and I'm just throwing out this example just because he's been in the news of late, but, you know, are guys like Steve Jobs being flown into Area 51 or you know, the pinnacles of technology in different areas? Are they being brought in and you know what I mean? Like, you know, say we've got the iPod. Where was the iPod or the iPad, you know, 15 years ago? Did they have something like that 15 years ago? And if so, who was responsible for that?
Well, you know, and again, if you believe that some of the people that I've talked to, and here's the hardest part with a lot of stuff with Area 51, is it's much like it is with anything else. You never know with some of these people, are they telling the truth? Are they stretching it a little bit? You know, what was their involvement? That's the unfortunate part, is that in many situations, what I did was I spoke to the gentleman who ran the tour, and he in turn put me into contact with some people by email. And there are some of these people that I swear when I read this stuff from them that it has to be positively be true. And there's other times when I just, you know, think they're full of crap. As to bringing in people like Steve Jobs, I think, well, they may or may not need Steve Jobs. They may have people who have worked for Steve Jobs or people who have advised Steve Jobs. You know, again, I don't think that I have to do anything kind of high profile. And the one thing that is really amazing is the fact that all the information, everything that's out there now, is that they have been able to clamp the lid down on top of Area 51 as well as they have. So I'm sure that, you know, when it began in the original, like in the early 50s, one of the ways that the American space program got started was by taking the German scientists from World War II. And, you know, the Russians and the Americans kind of divvied those guys up. And they had a lot to do with a lot of the progression that happened in the 1960s. So I'm sure that if there's somebody there, these are probably some of the smartest people on the face of the earth.
What are some of the things, the most interesting things that people who have worked for or been inside Area 51 told you?
Well, they tell me mostly about things that aren't there, that things that they had heard about, and when they get there, they're kind of disappointed not to find them. One is that there's always been a rumor that there's an underground railroad that goes almost across the entire United States, and I haven't been able to talk to anybody who's seen that or claimed that it's real. I think the interesting thing that I found from talking to some people is they really, you know, we look at it as, oh my God, how amazing to work there, but they kind of look at it as a 9-to-5 job. I mean, they're flown in, they stay there for a while, they work on the stuff that they're supposed to work on, and they kind of look at it just as another day at the office.
You know, it's funny you mention that because I was looking at what the hell was the name of that? I forget the name of the documentary, but there's a preview of it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But there is a shot of the filmmakers are on the side of a mountain somewhere, and they're filming the white bus with the blacked out windows that drives through the desert and brings the guys to work at 7 a.m. And then the guys get back into the bus at 4 p.m. and they drive back through the desert the other way and they go home. And obviously, if you're in a bus with blacked out windows, they don't want you to see what's going on. They don't want you to see anything. So, I mean, just from looking at this bus and looking at it, you know, from far away on top of this mountain, looking at this, it's just like these poor guys get up in the morning. They're taken somewhere. They don't even know where they're going. They don't know what the place looks like. They're taken to their office. They do whatever work they've got to do, and they're put right back on that bus. That job has to suck.
Yeah, I think it's basically your one of your worst jobs in history. Plus, also, you have to sign all this paperwork and go through all this background stuff just to make sure that, one, you're not the kind of person that's going to go there and get drunk or has money problems and want to sell an exclusive to a newspaper or something. I got to feel like it is probably one of the worst jobs in the world. You have to be kind of treated like crap. You know, I mean, to the extent where they get just enough work out of you. But, you know, one of the reasons why with a lot of these guys they haven't been able to talk before is when they leave Area 51, and I'd be very fascinated to find someone who left and talked to them about what that exit interview was like.
Sure. You know?
But they sign agreements when they exit saying that they will not talk about anything that is currently still going on. So in many cases, I would imagine they leave and maybe something they worked on was really, really big or really important, and they have to go on with their lives and they have to move forward. I knew a gentleman one time who was a Secret Service man for Ronald Reagan, and when he left that service, he couldn't get work anywhere, mainly because when he would go in for a job interview, they'd ask for, you know, where he used to work before, and could he get some recommendations, and everything was classified, so they couldn't tell him.
Sure.
You know, and so I had to figure also that once you've worked in Area 51, basically it would be kind of hard to go to another job unless you could basically start all over again.
Now, when you talk to people, And presumably they've signed these disclosure agreements here. I mean, are these people that, obviously you're not mentioning their name, they can't be traced. Are these people that they're comfortable telling you a lot of stuff? Or is it kind of a deal where you go, okay, what did you see? And they say, well, I can't tell you. So you go, okay, well, was there a railroad? No, there wasn't a railroad. So yeah. Is that kind of how it is?
It's kind of like, have you ever seen the movie All the President's Men?
I have not, but...
Well, there's a scene in there where they're talking to people about Watergate, and it's like, okay, I'm going to count to five, and if you've seen this, then hang up before I get to five, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are just basically, what they've said to me is that these days especially, it's too damn easy to trace them.
Yeah.
So the fact is, if they say something, it's going to be very easy to figure out where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
That's the interesting thing. When we went up to Area 51, one of the first things I was told when we went back was to turn off your cell phone when you get up close to the far as you can go line. And I said, why? And they said, because with using reverse technology, whatever, you know, the phone, you take calls on it, but they can also use it as a listening device. So depending on what you're talking about, it may people may decide to come down and speak to you if they're at the borderline one way or the other, if they think you're there to snoop or do something more than just come out and take a look at the place.
I always thought it was kind of interesting whenever you'd hear an interview or you'd watch something on television and it would be like a high-ranking colonel or whatever the deal is, and he's talking about his experiences, but we want to protect his identity, so he's, you know, we're going to put him in shadow and we're going to disguise his voice. And meanwhile, he's talking about all this stuff, and it's just kind of like, really? You can't be traced based on the story you're telling right here. I mean, wouldn't this be kind of specific to you in you know, I don't know. I was just kind of thought that was, I don't know how works.
You're absolutely right about that. And I think what basically keeps people that work at Area 51 a little more nervous is the fact that, and this is not to say that whoever is in charge or whatever the shadow government or whatever you want, the conspiracy you want to go with, you don't want to say anything that's going to get your family in trouble.
No, sure.
Or be able to use something that they can use against you. But, I mean, there have been people that have, spoken to the media, and the next day the FBI shows up with a warrant for their computers and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever talked to any of these people and kind of had to try to do the reverse sort of deal where you try and get them on something so they go, I can't speak about that. So they don't deny it, but you just kind of figure, oh, well, you know, you didn't.
Well, what happens with them mostly, Brian, is they get, in the beginning, they're like, yeah, I'll talk to you whenever I can. And then as they start to realize as the conversation goes on that they're going to have to get a little bit deeper than they thought,
mm-hmm.
then suddenly they shut down.
Yeah.
They just realize that, you know, maybe I've said too much, maybe I've gone too far. And, you know, if you've ever go out to Area 51, it's a fascinating, it's a fascinating situation. I'm kind of a city guy. I don't get out in the country all that much. But when you get out in parts of the desert out there, it is deathly quiet.
Oh, yeah.
Almost eerie. And if you go out to Area 51, you go out the highway, and then there is this white mailbox. It's white now, but it used to be a black mailbox. And that was the place where guys like Bob Lazar took people to supposedly watch UFOs, and that's been kind of a gathering point. It's really only a mailbox for the rancher, Mr. Medlin, who lives out there. And from what I've been told also is you have a better chance fighting the guards at Area 51 than you do trespassing on Mr. Medlin's ranch, because he will shoot first. But you drive out there, and there are sensors in the road. They've talked about this before, which is kind of funny because it's a dirt road you travel out. And if they, you know, do they need the sensors? Because they sure can see all the dust you're kicking up when you're driving out there. But when you get out there to that very spot where it's like, okay, right here, it's a simple sign. There's no gate, anything. It's just a sign that says, you know, no trespassing past this point. You know, use of force has been authorized.
Mm-hmm.
And you get out there, and it's really, really quiet, and you look up on the left-hand side, and I'll send you a picture of this. There's cameras that are posted up on the hills so they can look down. There's sensors all around there because there are no gates. And these sensors have to be probably some of the most delicate sensors that can exist because they would have to tell the difference between animals and people because there's so much wildlife out there.
Sure, yeah.
But if you sit up and you look off, I remember standing, looking off the right, and again, I snapped a picture of this, and it was pretty amazing. There is the Jeep that sits up there with the guys that they refer to affectionately as the camo guys.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the security guys. And they just sit there. And I know that I wandered up the hill a little bit to take a look at something, and I guess I got a little too much, a little too close to the borderline, and they started up the Jeep. And I looked over to him and just kind of put my hands up like, okay, I'm backing up, no problem. And you start to wonder after a while, you know, is this the way they amuse themselves? Yeah. It's like, oh, you know, it's been so boring. Here's a guy wandering around. Let's scare him a little bit. Let's turn on the Jeep, you know. But those guys, and, you know, it looks like, you know, really and truly, the guys, the camo guys that work there, all they're really going to do is call the sheriff. There have been occasions where they've come down and taken away film or done stuff like that. But mostly they are told not to interfere or lay hands on or do anything to to anybody who wanders up and is just looking around. Now, obviously, if you try to crash the gate, you know, but that's like it would be at any military base. If you try to just drive your car straight through onto the base, they're going to go after you the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fascinating to be up there, and it's really a very eerie feeling.
You know, I saw another piece of footage of somebody that had filmed that Jeep, and it just totally reminded me. I'm sure many people here have seen No Country for Old Men,
mm-hmm,
where
he
looks up on the deal, and here comes the Jeep or whatever, and it just looks exactly like that. You know, they're sitting there looking down on you, and you know, when you mentioned the force, the right to use force. You know, there's always, I think a lot of people would report that, you know, no deadly force or anything has ever been used on anybody who's investigated Air 51. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, presumably, we wouldn't know if that had been the case.
Well, that's always been the joke, and that is that anybody who had trouble with that had never showed back up again.
Yeah, you'd never report that.
You know, and they also, remember, at nighttime more so, they used the infamous black helicopters, which mm-hmm. fly around the area. Because if somebody is going to try to sneak in, they're going to do it at night. You know, but the helicopters have been known, you know, and whether this is just being vindictive or being careful in the situation, to if they see a car or something sitting up there, they'll drop down a little low and kick the dust up to try to scare them off.
At this point, are black helicopters, I don't want to say commonplace, but is that something that is seen regularly now, or is that still kind of a fringe sort of deal?
It's more of a fringe kind of deal. They come out from time to time, but you don't see them all that often. I basically think that, you know, the helicopters kind of go back to the old X-Files days. And there was a lot of talk about that, but I don't think they're used as much. I think technology has moved so far ahead that they don't even need the helicopters that much anymore.
I just remember that, I just remembered this. I don't even remember where I was, but like sometime in the last 3 years, I was somewhere. And it wasn't in, like, it was out in the middle of nowhere for something, and I saw a black helicopter, and mm-hmm. I was completely blown away. I was like, holy, that is a black helicopter right there. It was just the weirdest thing, and it was just kind of, you know, circling around, and then off it went, and I cannot for the life of me. So I'm sure somebody who was there with me, if they're listening to this, will remind me where we were at, but I just remember seeing it, and just it was like, wow, I have just seen a black helicopter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, like I said, I think they're very, very impressive, but I don't think they use them all that much. Now, you were talking about the white buses that brings people in and out. The second time we went up there, we did actually see a truck come out from down the road from Area 51. It was completely white. It had no license plates on it. The windows were completely blacked up. And I said to someone, so is that coming from Area 51? They said, yeah, they're taking something out of here, and they don't want anybody to know what it is.
Interesting. Now, would you say, I guess from talking to people and just your own investigations, is Area 51 currently the most top secret military base in this entire country, or is it kind of the deal of, well, the real most top secret one we just don't know about?
I kind of lean toward the latter. I think that, again, it's a good way to misdirect people. The government loves the fact that everybody knows the legend of Area 51 and they concentrate on Area 51. Who's to say there's not another base someplace else very quietly tucked away somewhere where they're really doing the work, and this is just basically something to... I mean, granted, there is stuff going on there, but, you know, if I had something really, really... Well, I take that back. You know, in some cases, what you want to do is, if you're going to have something that's really important that you're working on, sometimes it's best to kind of, in a way, have it in plain sight. I mean, have it someplace where people knows where it is, and they won't really as much challenge it or question it because they just accept it. Oh, it's Area 51. It's going to be in there. We can't get to that. We don't know what it is.
Do you believe that there are bases inside mountains in this country?
I don't think I would refer to them as bases like you see in the James Bond films or whatever. You know,
sure.
They're hidden inside volcanoes, stuff like that. I think that there are bases pretty much all around the country. Not so much, and maybe they're not as nefarious as we think they are. Maybe they're basically there to, especially in these post 9/11 days, to protect for terrorism and things like that. But I'm sure that there has to be. I would lay money on it.
I should probably know this, but I could have sworn there was some sort of base in a mountain where, in case of emergency, the vice president is taken.
Yeah, I believe there is something like that. I think they talked about when 9/11 happened. They rushed that Dick Cheney off to someplace like that. It could be a mountain base or it could be underground. I think that's pretty much standard for all countries. They all have some place. Unless you're Muammar Gaddafi, but they but he might even have some place. Who knows? But there's always some place where you have to be prepared in those situations to take your leaders or your important people and put them someplace where they're safe, so that way the country can go on.
Now, anybody who's done any investigation into Area 51 knows the name Bob Lazar.
Yes.
And he's obviously championing the idea of there is a lot of alien stuff going on there, reverse engineering of alien craft, that sort of thing. What are your thoughts on the stories of Bob Lazar? Is he a total crank? Did he at least work there at some point? What do you believe?
Boy, that's when you talk to people about Bob Lazar, you get two sides of the coin. You really do. So there are people who religiously believe that everything he said is right, and there's other people who believe he's a crackpot. I think that in general, like it is in most situations, the truth lies somewhere in between. It would be easier to believe all of Bob Lazar's stories if there weren't all these other weird aspects of his personal life that show some unbalance. I truthfully will say to you, I don't think I can completely believe him.
Now, I guess we got a couple of questions here that we'll get into before
sure.
we wrap it up here today. This person says, do you believe in the rumor that Area 51 was really a craft? Actually, he's talking about if it housed a craft sent by the Russians to try to mess with our heads. Not sure exactly what he's asking here.
Oh, I think what he's referring to, there was a book that came out in May. It's a really good book, and I highly recommend it, called Area 51, An Uncensored History of America's Top Secret Military Base by Annie Jacobson.
Mm-hmm.
And basically throughout her entire bunk, she kind of debunks the fact that there was anything ever extraterrestrial there. She basically sees it as a black ops situation involving the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and a lot of the other government stuff that goes on. I think what he's referring to is a very controversial chapter that ends the book, where and it's almost the kind of thing where it's more disturbing than if there really were aliens. She feels, and she talked to somebody who remains anonymous, who worked at Area 51, who was involved with Roswell, that after World War II, Joseph Stalin, the dictator of Russia, was very inspired by the Orson Welles War of the Worlds radio play from the 1930s, where everybody got panicky and thought this was actually aliens were invading. And he thought that it would be a kind of a good psychological step to see if he could induce some paranoia and some fear in America. So he was able to gather a one-wing biplane, from Germany, and I believe it was called the Horton. And he basically got that from Germany. And supposedly he made a deal with the Nazi angel of death, Dr. Joseph Mengele from Auschwitz, in exchange for a lab to work on some genetic composition for him. And what they did was they took, and this is very unsavory, they took two people about 13 years old and did genetic work on them to make them look a little more unearthly. Put them in this robot plane, which was it was called the Horton Ho 229. That's what it was. It was a forerunner to the B-2 stealth bomber, and by radio control flew it over Roswell, and it crashed. Now, a lot of people have said, and what they found there was actually this whole thing, and that America, that the FBI and the CIA were able to uncover that and figure out what it was, but for some reason never ever pressed it or made that knowledge to the public. There's a lot of questions with this, with her source, because this person is anonymous. And oftentimes when you do something as serious as this story, you want to have something a little more than a guy who's anonymous. But supposedly the guy worked at Area 51, did sign one of those exit agreements, and he can't speak about it. Also, there is some question about the timeline. If you look at what happened at the end of World War II and the times that she talks about it, there may be some things off. She claims, and she's a very reputable writer, Annie Jacobson is, that this is what happened, and she firmly stands behind that story. This is one of those stories I don't want to believe is true, mainly because it's just so horrifying to think about that. But I have not seen enough evidence outside of her book that would basically support this. I mean, she even herself has said that she got emails from a European conspiracy group that said, hey, even we don't believe this.
That's saying something. It is. First off, this sounds like a conspiracy right up your alley here. But I don't know. I mean, just as a journalist myself, I'd like a second source. You know, has anyone else come forward to say, okay, you know, I'm going to back up what this guy said about this? Or, you know, on top of that, I mean, let's say you don't have a second source, but in the entire history of investigations of Roswell, is there any other story that backs this up?
No, that's the whole thing. And that's, in fact, to the extent, the whole book is so good, too, Brian, though. I have to really recommend it. It's so interesting because she went out and got 75 people who worked at Area 51 to basically go on the record about what they saw and what went on there. And they were upset after the book came out because they felt like, well, when they spoke to her before, they were trying to be truthful and get a part of history out to her. And then for whatever reason, whether it was sensationalism or to sell books or whatever, this Shaggy Dog story came out of nowhere and was at the very end of the book. And then they were very upset with it. But yeah, I would say that for something as serious as that, and also for the fact that if American intelligence knew about this, why didn't they let people know what had happened? You know, there has to be a little bit more than just an anonymous source on this.
One last question before we wrap it up today, since we've been talking about UFOs here quite a bit, and mm-hmm. We probably could talk for hours, but another show sometime.
Yeah.
I guess the bottom line is you have never seen anything when heading out there towards Dreamland, but do you believe, I know you've talked about your wife here, do you believe that extraterrestrials have at any point visited the Earth? And if you do, what do you believe is the best evidence presented so far?
I'm kind of a show me guy on this kind of stuff, and I find it kind of hard to believe that every time an alien lands, it's in a backwoods swamp to one guy who's drunk. You know, I would like to have, you know, why don't they land in the city or someplace? And why don't they land at a university where they can talk to people? Why is it always way out in the boondocks with somebody? I would say that, like a lot of people say, that I think it would be extremely egotistical to say that we're the only form of life in the universe, that there isn't some other life out there somewhere. And, you know, there's a lot of theories, you know, from Easter Island on down that they've left things here that could prove that aliens actually were here. But I don't think there's anything that really flat out away, I would say, that would make me say, yes, aliens have to exist. I mean, I'm open-minded to it. And one of the things, if you go out to some of the flatbeds in the desert there, you'll find petroglyphics, carvings in the stone that Indians made. Back in those times, and you will see all kinds of strange little markings that kind of make you wonder if they're trying to tell a story about something that landed out there. But there's not one thing out there right now that makes me say with 100% assurance that there are UFOs.
Well, Dan, I want to thank you very much for doing the show today. This show was awesome. And,
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
We didn't even
get to portals in the desert, too. So, my God.
Not just portals in the desert, but we're going to talk at some point down the road about haunted Hollywood. I know that you're looking into haunted Las Vegas. Just from your last statement there, I mean, there's a million different directions we can go. So hopefully we can get you back on one of these days.
Would love to.
Anything in particular you'd like to plug?
No, basically, if anybody wants to contact me through Facebook, there is Dan Farron. I'd be more than happy to talk to you if you have any other questions or whatever. Please, though, if you are someone who firmly believes that Roswell was a weather balloon, don't send me notes to try to convince me. And if you believe that aliens exist, I'm not going to argue with you. Don't send me notes. Send me information, fine, but I don't go on Facebook to argue with people. That's the only thing.
So check that out on Facebook, everybody. We're up on Facebook as well. Brand new page, facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. The website, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. And Dan, thanks again. And, of course, thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with a brand new show. Got a lot of stuff great coming up, so check it out. And we'll talk to you again after a while.